Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, March 19, 2014. The World Food Program begins dropping food in Unity State and Upper Nile States.
Because we cannot reach those areas, there are hundreds of thousands of people in critical need of food assistance.
And the second round of cholera vaccination begins in South Sudan, even though an outbreak has not been reported.
We were told to come here and take a vaccination because we don't know the day of the cholera. That is why.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. We have some breaking news for you from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. South Sudan might face consequences from the international community if the parties at the table do not take the peace negotiations more seriously. That warning comes today from Donald Boot, United States Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan. He issued the warning on behalf of Britain, Norway, and the European Union, adding that greater efforts are needed on the part of representatives of both the government and anti-government forces. Peace talks mediated by the East African bloc IGAD are set to reopen tomorrow in Addis Ababa. But South Sudan's government said this week that it would not send a delegation to the talks if pro-rebel political figures, which the government had detained for several weeks, are part of the process. The opposition side, meanwhile, has voiced concerns about the stabilization and protection force that IGAD's member states are planning to send to South Sudan next month. European Union Special Envoy to the Horn of Africa, Alexander Rondos, warns that sanctions could be placed on any country which blocks the progress towards peace. The World Food Programme, or WFP, says it has resorted to dropping food from the air to assist hundreds of thousands of displaced South Sudanese in remote parts of the country due to the conflict that has started in mid-December. Philip Aleu has the story for VOA from Juba.
WFP spokesperson Carlius McDonald says planes began a dropping cereal today to 8,000 displaced people at Ganyel Kam in Unity State. McDonald says eight other locations in Unity, Upper Nile, and Jonglei State are identified as areas in urgent need of food assistance.
Because we cannot reach those areas, there are hundreds of thousands of people in critical need of food assistance, and we have not been able to reach by road or river, and they don't have a place where an airplane can land, so we have to drop it by air. We are doing food assistance in both anti-government and controlled and government-controlled areas.
McDonald says WFP would rather deliver food any other way, seeing airdrops are so expensive. But people in at least nine areas are in such desperate need of food, they feel they have no choice.
We are in need of additional resources. Moving food by air is the most expensive way to do it. It is going to be more expensive. We had hoped to be able to access some of those areas by road more affordably, and we do hope that the security situation will allow us to reopen some of the road corridors.
Henry Omai Akolawin, a lawmaker representing Upper Nile State, says he welcomes the airdrops. Akolawin says thousands of civilians are staying in the bush due to the fighting in Upper Nile State. Reaching them even by airdrop will be difficult. Akolawin says many living in the bush were able to feed themselves before the crisis.
Even those who were farmed before, they have left everything. The whole places are being burned down. Then now the rains are coming. No preparation is being done now. I don't know whether people will be making planting in the next coming year because the whole life has been disrupted.
McDonald says WFP hopes that security improves in the remote areas so that truck can be used to transport food and other supplies to the displaced people. Despite a cessation of hostilities agreement signed in late January, there are still pockets of fighting that continues between government and anti-government forces. Those clashes block humanitarian access to civilian traffic in conflict zone. For BOA News, I'm Philip Aleu in Juba.
As Philip Aleu just reported, officials are worried about people going hungry in Upper Nile State, especially around Malakal town, where government and anti-government forces have been fighting for control of the town. Now, state officials have relocated the capital to Reng, near the border with Sudan. The state's information minister says the relocation is only temporary and that the government forces are trying to push rebels out of Malakal once and for all. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Kampala.
Upper Nile State Information Minister Philip Jiben Ogal says the State Council of Ministers made the decision to relocate state institutions to Reng after rebel forces recaptured the town for the second time last month.
We are going to Reng just for time being, some days, and then we will go to Malakal when they solve the security issue inside Malakal.
Jiben, who is also Upper Nile State spokesman, says Reng is a big town and has the capacity to host state institutions. He says some state officials have already moved to Reng, while others remain in Melut, Wauchiluk, and Lelo.
Reng is quite normal. Everything is okay. People in Reng, they are working and they are doing the job. Nothing about the issue of humanitarian inside Reng.
Unlike most South Sudanese towns, Reng has reliable electricity and street lights line paved roads. The town also has a large market that brings together Sudanese, Ethiopian, and South Sudanese traders. Jiben says he hopes in a few days or weeks, state government officials will return to the capital.
The fighting is still going on around Malakal because divided by two. Northernwood, our forces, they are there, and Southwood, those people, they are there.
Jiben says Malakal remains deserted after rebels took over in mid-February. While thousands of people sought refuge in the UN camp, hundreds of thousands of others went to neighboring towns and are still reluctant to return.
Those who are ran from Malakal, they went to the place called Wauchiluk, and Wauchiluk is near to Malakal. It is a part of the Malakal County. And also, most of them, they went to Lelo, and most of them, they went to another area. Is near to Malakal. Even in Malut, also we have camps for the IDP, and they are settled now. In Kodok also, the people, they are there and they are safe.
Jiben is calling on humanitarian agencies to provide emergency support, especially food, to the thousands of displaced in Upper Nile State. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Kampala, Uganda.
The second round of an emergency cholera vaccination campaign is underway at one of the displacement sites in Juba this week. Mid-air officials who are running the operation say it is unusual to administer the vaccine before a cholera outbreak has been reported, but they don't want to take any chances. Andrew Green has the story for VOA from Juba.
Simon Khan-Lok says last week's heavy rains ran under the plastic sheets he has used to build a temporary home. The water carried with it the trash and human waste that have piled up in areas of the UN compound where he has been living for the past 3 months. Aid agencies have warned with the rains expected to intensify in the coming days and weeks, it is only a matter of time before people become ill from waterborne diseases. That's why Lok and thousands of others are being proactive and taking their second and final dose of the cholera vaccine today.
We were told to come here and take a vaccination because we don't know the day of the cholera. That is why some person can fear that one day it will be sick.
Although cholera has not been reported since the fighting broke out in mid-December, the World Health Organization is still trying to immunize some 140,000 people across South Sudan over about a month. The oral vaccine can safely be given to everyone who is above 1 year old, except pregnant women. The WHO estimates two doses of the vaccine are generally 85% effective. MedAir vaccinators reached more than 21,000 people across the two sites in Juba during the first round. The UN estimates 32,000 people are living at the two camps. Hygiene and health promoters, including Gatrial Pham Rui, have been walking around the camp with megaphones encouraging people to come out to one of the six vaccination sites. They also go door to door talking to people about any concerns they might have.
We talk to thousands of people, more than that, because we can't estimate. This camp is very congested. They ask me that Is it important? Is this, they talk about the medicine is tasteless. They say that this tasteless medicine, is it good for us to forchag us? I told them that sure, this will forchag you from the cholera.
Wani Michael, MedAir's health manager for emergency responses, says the cost and difficulty of conducting a preventive cholera vaccination makes them rare. But he says in this case, it's worth it.
The impact is going to be positive. Of course, many people are going to be protected from the outbreak attacks of cholera.
The second round will wrap up next week in Juba. MedAir officials say they are planning a third round this month to make it available to people who missed the second dose. For VOA News, I am Andrew Green in Juba.
The medical aid group Doctors Without Borders warns that drug-resistant tuberculosis has become a global threat. It says despite the growing number of cases, there are no effective treatments. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Doctors Without Borders has released a crisis alert called the new face of an old disease. The group, also known by the French acronym MSF, says urgent action is needed to solve the problem. Dr. Philippe Ducrot is a TB advisor for MSF.
In MSF's experience, we're seeing MDR-TB, or multidrug-resistant TB, in more and more countries and in more numbers in our programs.
There are about 500,000 new cases of MDR-TB every year. Ducrot says it's hard enough dealing with MDR-TB, let alone an even stronger strain of the bacteria that causes XDR-TB, or extensively drug-resistant tuberculosis. He tells the story of an infected child in Central Asia.
After a year of treatment, she was failing treatment with all the drugs that we have. So this poor child had gone through treatment where she had suffered from nausea almost every day, and she was going deaf from one of the drugs. She was having to take over 7 different drugs every day, all with different side effects. And despite trying to take all of this treatment, she was failing treatment and showing the limits of the treatment that we have available currently.
Standard TB drugs do not work against the new forms of the disease. Treatment for MDR-TB could last 2 years, during which time a patient may swallow 10,000 pills and have daily injections for 8 months. And after all that, it may not work.
I think the main reason this has got to be a big problem is that although we've made some progress tackling TB, in recent years the global community has turned away from investing in improving on what we can do with TB. We've been satisfied with old answers. The reality is that we don't have currently the answers that will solve the problem of TB. We don't have actually effective treatments in new regimens that will actually tackle the large epidemic of multidrug-resistant TB.
Ducrot says bacteria can build resistance when TB patients fail to complete their drug regimen and when countries do not strictly control the use of medications.
It's a global problem which the global community needs to take responsibility for. Not just international organizations like our own or the World Health Organization, but I think also governments and pharmaceutical companies and academics. There are maybe lots of good individual initiatives, but I think as a global community, we really need to come together urgently and look at how we can have faster solutions that are going to deliver a real change at ground level for this epidemic.
The solution, he says, is a much shorter, more effective treatment. Currently, there are only about 5 to 8 drugs used to treat resistant TB, depending on the regimen needed. The 2 latest drugs available are actually the first new TB medications developed in 40 years.
Although that's cause for optimism, we still don't know how to use those drugs in new regimens, and so we're limited by adding them to a regimen that is already highly toxic and difficult for patients to take.
Dr. Ducrot says if a global investment is not made to address the epidemic, there will be a price to pay.
As an example, in the United States in the early 90s, there was an outbreak of multidrug-resistant TB, and as a result of a few hundred cases, the public health program invested nearly $1 billion US. That number of patients is not even a third of what we see in one of our programs in one country. If we don't start to step in early to deal with the problem now, you can multiply that figure by a huge number that you can pluck out of the air.
Doctors Without Borders says with only 1 in 5 people in need receiving treatment, the fatal airborne disease is left to spread indiscriminately. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
To protect yourself and your family from sickness and disease, it's important to be careful about water. Bottled water is safe to drink and cook with. But if you can't buy it, be sure to purify your water by boiling it or treating it with an approved water sanitation kit. To destroy microorganisms that cause disease or even kill, you need to boil water for at least 5 minutes. Then wait to allow any sediment to settle and let the water cool down before drinking. To help protect you, your children, and your family from sickness, make sure all your water is safe to drink.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, high-ranking SPLM official says President Kiir and Riek Machar need to sit down and talk face-to-face to solve their crisis. That story is next.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus, and there are now a number of options for listening to the program. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country. Check our website, voanews.com/South Sudan, for the listings. In Juba, you can listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5, VOA's 24-hour station. You can also find us on the following shortwave frequencies, 9490, 11655, and 13870 kilohertz. Or you can listen on the web, voanews.com/South Sudan. And finally, you can download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Many people believe that the role of women in society is changing. What do you think?
I appreciate the fact that ladies come into leadership and they do exceptionally well. Because ladies, when they get into leadership position, they think, they feel, and they do things that are very useful to all the people. They are less corrupt.
I think the role of women is changing now in our society.
The role of women is changing in society. Look at leadership. As I'm speaking, our Speaker of Parliament today is a woman, that is Rebecca Kadag, which was not the case before.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
The Chief of Staff of former SPLM Secretary General Pagan Amum held a press conference in Nairobi today calling for unity in the ruling party. Cholam says the only way to resolve the country's problem is through dialogue among its political leaders, including the four who are on trial. Lucy Pony is reporting from Nairobi.
Cholam says the SPLM leaders should reunite to achieve peace for one and all in South Sudan.
The unity within the SPLM is a priority of the nation. And therefore, if SPLM is not united and no moves is making the dialogue begin within the SPLM, the crisis in South Sudan would never end. A strong SPLM is a strong South Sudan, and without the dialogue, without the solution within the SPLM, without the releasing of the detainees, without the releasing of Dr. Peter Oduok, we will not have peace in South Sudan.
Lam says that the government's move to recall the 7 former detainees released to the custody of Kenya to attend the trial in Juba of the remaining 4 detainees only undermines the people's confidence in the government, since the Ministry of Justice had already acknowledged it had insufficient evidence to prosecute them.
The evidence that we have in court are not strong enough. What the government is moving to do, it's moving to find other reasons to keep these detainees in prisons. Now, let's take the case of the SPLM Secretary General Paganamum. He has an issue that the government is trying to revive. It's not the government even, it's the party. It's the party. He was accused of embezzling $30 million. Now, this case was never taken to court. He's never had a fair trial. He never made a statement about it.
Lam also says two of the former detainees placed under Kenyan custody, Dengalor and Kosti Manibe, might also be charged with embezzling $7 million if they return to Juba. Lam says if the conflict is not resolved soon, there is risk of an all-out regional war.
Therefore, it needs a very close care. It needs encouragement of the leaders, more negotiations to go on, and even a dialogue between the two leaders. I'm not understanding why President Selva and former Vice President Riak cannot sit in one place and discuss. What is the reason keeping that happening? Why is the IGAD not moving to that direction?
Lam is calling on both parties to focus on peaceful negotiations and to include all stakeholders, including civil society organizations. He also urges the leaders in the armed rebellion to recognize that reforms will never be achieved through war, but only through peaceful engagements. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
The chief negotiator for the SPLM North, Yasir Arman, says he is prepared to relaunch African Union-mediated talks with Khartoum, but wants them to be held outside Sudan. Arman told VOA fellow May Abdel Nasser that death sentence imposed on him last week by the Sudanese government for his role in rebellions in southern Kordofan and Blue Nile states shows that Khartoum is not serious about holding a national dialogue.
Our position is clear. When we met the government delegation during the negotiation in Addis Ababa recently, we said the SPLM is for a national constitutional conference that will bring all the political forces, civil societies, but that will need an independent facilitation. And we suggested that a body from the AUHRB, the representative for the UN Secretary General, and the representative for chair of the IGAD, and Mohammed Ben Chambers of Darfur, for all of them to constitute a body, and that we would like to have a preparatory meeting outside Sudan, and after we agree on the procedural issues.
You and other senior leaders of SPLM North were sentenced to death by a Sudanese court. What is the impact of that court decision on your political career?
As you know, May, that again is a clear indication that the government is not serious for peace and reconciliation in Sudan. At the time, they are talking about national constitution and dialogue. It is the same time they sent us to this. It is the same time that they deny the national consensus forces the right to have a rally inside Khartoum. It is at the same time when they shot dead a student in the Khartoum University, and at the same time that more than 150,000 civilians in Darfur, they were targeted and they are displaced from their home. And that is a clear indication that Bashir just wants to buy time, and sentencing us to this is a political game. There is no independent judiciary. And we are warning the government not to execute those who are in the custody in Sinja and Damazin. And we are urging the human rights organization worldwide to have a strong stand defending the right of the political detainees and prisoners of war who are in the custody of the Sudan government.
What are your plans for the next presidential elections in Sudan? And what the agenda of SPLM?
Well, the agenda of the SPLM is to achieve serious democratization and reforms in Sudan to level the ground and for the environment to be conducive for everybody to compete. And we are far from realizing and achieving this situation. We will struggle with our people for peace and for democracy. We are ready to have a real, durable, just peace, not a piecemeal solution for all the Sudanese, a transitional arrangement that will level the ground and that will affect the democratic transformation, and that is upon all the Sudanese men and women to compete in the next elections after we achieve the democratic transformation.
That was VOA fellow May Abdel Nasser speaking with SPLM North Secretary General Yasir Arman in Kampala yesterday. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Pro-Russian forces have taken control of Ukraine's Navy headquarters in the Crimean port of Sevastopol, a day after Russia signed a treaty with local authorities to make Crimea part of Russia. Witnesses say at least 200 of the unarmed self-defense forces entered the base today and raised the Russian flag. There was no evidence, as Ukrainian service members reportedly did not resist the takeover. No violence was reported. Thousands of Russian soldiers have overtaken Crimea in recent weeks. The majority Russian region voted in a referendum on Sunday to break away from Ukraine and join Russia. Frustration over the lack of progress in the search for a missing Malaysia Airlines jet erupted today at a daily news conference where Chinese relatives of missing passengers confronted Malaysian officials. The grieving families burst into the room where the media briefing was to be held, yelling and holding a banner demanding that Malaysia tell the truth about what happened to the plane that has been missing since March 8th. And finally, Israel says its air force has bombed Syrian military positions in response to an attack on its forces in the Golan Heights. The military said today that the targets included an army training facility, military headquarters, and artillery batteries. The airstrikes come a day after Israel said an explosive device targeting its forces injured 4 soldiers. It blamed the attack on Syrian government forces. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Get Up, Stand Up by Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. Is that all that Peter is going?
Listening to Bob Marley and the Wailers with that song, Get Up, Stand Up. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, get up, stand up.